May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be ever acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. Render therefore unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. I'm sitting in the front row of folding chairs in a pavilion whose big barn doors have all been rolled back to let the warm mountain air of a Colorado summer breeze come through. Around 200 of us have made the annual pilgrimage, or annual before COVID anyways. This year feels special as we struggle to reclaim that easy community the pandemic nearly broke. And there are five young people up on stage, tuning instruments and chatting amiably with one another, as glad as we are to be released from quarantine and making music live again. That word, music, has become a little too commonplace, I think. Perhaps not here. It's so easy to turn on some music in the car or on your phone. The Bluetooth speaker is always ready. But the truth behind all but the most successfully produced and corporately delivered music looks much more like these five young people opening cases and testing microphones. A fragile arrangement of passionate people trying to make a living from art. And they've mostly just graduated from college over the past few years, and their first album was released just as the world was shutting down. But soon they'll want spouses, maybe kids, and then will they be able to afford to do what they're doing for us this morning? Our first song is called Jericho, says the young man with the guitar. It's about a soldier. Interesting, I think. I know some soldiers. And that sounded like a biblical reference. There's no way for me to know now that 4 minutes and 18 seconds later, I will be as emotionally devastated as I have been all year. He sings. These days I sleep under an open sky, 'cause I can't seem to sleep in my bed. Back before we split up, my wife told me, it's just in your head. A civilian's life used to make sense to me. Then I shipped out and served my two tours. I retired last year, tried to come back to life as before. But at night I still fly back to Jericho, where we brought their walls tumbling down, buried my friends who have fallen and never been found, and God's children I'll save from their enemies with a horn that he gave me to blow. Finish my days in the only place I really know, Jericho. The punchline of that gospel reading that we heard a little bit ago, it's so well known, so thoroughly woven into the fabric of Western culture, that it hardly seems there could be anything more to say about it. This scene happens toward the end of Matthew's gospel, and Jesus has drawn the attention of powerful people who do not want their status quo overturned. The Pharisees and the Herodians, who have no other common cause under the sun, are united in their desire to be rid of Jesus. And so they set a trap. And it's a clever trap. Is it lawful to pay taxes to the emperor or not? There is no correct way for Jesus to answer. To pay taxes to the emperor is to support your own oppression and fund a pagan regime that cannot tolerate your worship of the one true God. But to refuse to pay those taxes is to incite revolt and maybe violate the law of Moses. That's the trap. Whichever way Jesus answers, he will have given the authorities a reason to arrest him. They aren't testing him. They're giving him a multiple choice menu of what he would prefer to be executed for. It's a clever trap. But Jesus is good at this. "It's Caesar's coin," he says. "Give it back to him." He's called them hypocrites already, and now he shows everyone that they are blasphemers as well, these Pharisees and Herodians, carrying this pagan image into the sacred temple, supporting the system that crushes all of them because they get to be on top of the pile while it's being crushed. There's no response to be made, and so his accusers wander off, not because their minds have been changed, but to plot other traps. It's a clever trap and a clever escape and a catchy line. Give to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God's. It's a good line, and it gives us space to maneuver in this fallen world where governments are a necessary evil and God doesn't always seem to be right there ready to help. We have to live, and splitting things up between Caesar and God is an effective way to manage a complicated world. But that trap was a trap for us, too, because what belongs to Caesar and what belongs to God? There's not always a picture on the denarius that we're holding to make it clear what we should do. And the young man is still up there on stage, singing about the soldier. When it's sunny, I sit in the public park. When it's raining, I ride on the train. At this diner, they serve me free coffee. They know me by name. And the guys from my unit come talk to me about the jobs they've been trying to chase. And I tell them how after it's dark, I return to that place. How at night I still fly back to Jericho, where we brought their walls tumbling down, buried my friends who have fallen, never been found. And God's children I'll save from their enemies with a horn that he gave me to blow. Finish my days in the only place I really know, Jericho. I spent 3 years as the chaplain to an aviation battalion. And while I was there, I learned that warrant officers, the pilots, don't very much like to talk to chaplains. I can count the number of warrant officers that came to my office for a serious conversation on one hand, even if that hand was missing 3 fingers. So I remember both of those men pretty well. The first came to me from another unit entirely, because he didn't want to be seen entering his own chaplain's office. And he was only there because he didn't feel like he could safely go to behavioral health and still be allowed to fly. So I was the backup. I just need to check that I'm not going crazy, he said. And then he told me about the things that he'd seen and done in his career as an attack helicopter pilot. Usually I'm fine, he said. Usually I sleep fine. But then sometimes I'll have nightmares. They're not even nightmares, really. They're just accurate dreams of what happened. And it's not the visuals or the sounds that get me. I remember them all clearly. It's the smell. I forget, but then in the dream, I can smell that cockpit all these years later. And I wake up covered in sweat, and I know I'm not going to sleep much for the next month or so. What do you think, Chaplain? Am I crazy? Not crazy. Just wounded, I tell him. Just a man trying to render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. A man who signed up to serve his country, to protect the defenseless, to stand against evil. A man who has discovered that such service is generally not as clear as a face engraved on a coin. The second warrant officer who ever came to my office did so about half a year before he died of a suspected self-inflicted gunshot wound. We have to say it that way. A suspected self-inflicted gunshot wound, even though he was on a video call with his estranged wife at the time. And she watched him do it. Now, all good story songs have three verses, and the young man on stage is about to bring his song about the soldier to a close, now that the instrumental break has reached its climax, and tears are streaming unwiped down my face. A garden grows now where that city burned. Children play with old guns from the war. But the bullets are gone now. They don't even know what they're for. And my family back home can sleep well at night, knowing I'll keep them safe every day. Till I die and I'm laid to rest under the ruins we made. Till at night I can fly back to Jericho, on two wings made by God's own design. Buried my friends who have fallen and been left behind. And God's children I'll save from their enemies with the horn that he gave me to blow. I'll finish my days in the only place I really know. Jericho. Render, therefore, unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God's. Those are the words that the Pharisees and the Herodians deserved. Those are the words that the people following Jesus 2,000 years ago needed. And there is still a great deal of truth and practical wisdom to be had from the philosophy behind those words. There's a reason why even people who don't know those words came out of Jesus' mouth still know those words. But there is a greater truth underneath those words. Maybe Jesus knew that this deeper truth would get twisted out of shape in the hands of those who had come to entrap him, so he couldn't say it just then. Maybe Jesus knew his followers weren't ready for this deeper truth just yet, and so he gave them what they could understand. He will show them this deeper truth on Good Friday, They still won't entirely understand. But here it is. You can't render unto Caesar the things which are Caesar's, because none of it is Caesar's. Not the coin with the face stamped on it, not the service rendered to country, not the soldier come home from war and wounded. None of it is Caesar's. All of it is God's. All of it is God's. I've taken you on a bit of a journey this afternoon, and I know it's been a painful journey for some of you, as it is for me. But I've taken you on this journey because I believe that this truth matters, that this is a matter quite literally of life and death, that knowing and trusting this truth can be the difference between life and death. All of it is God's. The young musicians on the stage and their beautifully crafted moment of fragile transcendence is God's. The Apache pilot, kept awake by the uncertainty that all of the lives he's taken actually deserved to be taken, is God's. The self-inflicted gunshot wound and the 8-year-old boy who has to live with it are God's. Even Caesar, in the end, is God's. All of it is God's. We have to know this. We have to trust it. We have to live our lives as if we were convinced that this was true. I don't know if we survive otherwise. The joy and the pain, the broken and contrite hearts, the life and the death, the soldier, the spouse, and the child, all of it is God's. Amen.